San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Sunday, January 30th, 2022. Today's lesson is Prove It with Reverend Mark Obkamp as we open the 25th annual Season for Nonviolence.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So there's some excitement going on in this room this morning. There's some really good energy. I think we're all feeling it. And Dr. Connie and I were talking a little bit before service about how already our intentions are beginning to manifest that we set at the beginning of this month. So we're almost a whole month into this year already. And how many changes have been going on in your lives? I know plenty have been going on in mine. So this morning, as we prepare for today's lesson, let us anchor ourselves in the truth that there is one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence which flows through all creation. And I call this one power God, the living Spirit Almighty, one absolute, indestructible cause in which we live and move and have our being. How great is that? One. Only one. And that one is self-existent. So I know we all know now what today is. It's the beginning of the season for nonviolence. And what is this, may you ask? Well, I'm glad that you did. The Season for Nonviolence was established in 1998 by Arun Gandhi, Mohandas' grandson, as a yearly event celebrating the philosophies and lives of Mohandas Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. The idea was developed with the help of Dr. Michael Beckwith and Dr. Mary Morrissey of the Association for Global New Thought and the Parliament of World's Religions. The season begins with the remembrance of the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi on January 30th and culminates on April 4th, the assassination date of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It is anchored by a mission statement of principles and commitments by participants toward living life in a nonviolent way. So, who's ready to commit and get started? I better see some hands out there. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so let us put into practice this belief. Please put your hand over your heart and repeat after me. It is my belief.
It is my belief.
That every person can move the world.
That every person can move the world.
Toward a more peaceful existence.
Toward a more peaceful existence.
Through daily non-violent choices and actions. In your programs, you will find this sheet. And on this sheet, you will find that we are going to do a commitment together. So, repeat it. So, what I'm going to do, I'm going to read the boldface print. And then you are going to read after me, with me, in the smaller print. San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Congregational Pledge of Nonviolence. Making peace must start within ourselves, in our families, and in our congregation. Each of us, members of the San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, commit ourselves as we kiss to Him. To become nonviolent and peaceable people, to respect self and others, to respect myself, to affirm others, and to avoid uncaring criticism, hateful words, physical attacks, and self-destructive behavior, to communicate better, to share my feelings honestly, to look for safe ways to express my anger, and to work for solving problems peacefully. To listen carefully to one another, especially those who disagree with me, and to consider others' feelings and needs rather than insist on having my own way. To forgive,
to apologize,
and make amends
when I have hurt another, to forgive others, and to keep from holding grudges, to respect nature, to treat the environment and all living things with respect and care, to recreate nonviolently,
to promote
athletic and recreational activities that encourage cooperation, and to avoid social activities that make violence look exciting, funny, or acceptable, to be courageous, to challenge violence in all forms whenever I encounter it, whether at home, at work, and in the congregation, or in the community, and stand with others who are treated unfairly, and all together. This is our pledge. These are our goals. We will check ourselves on what we have pledged once a year on the last Sunday in January, so that we can help each other become more peaceful people. And so it is. Eliminating violence, one congregation at a time, starting with our own. And now, I invite you to remove the other handout in your program and find January 30th, day one. Let us state this truth together. Today, I will reflect on what peace means to me.
I will reflect on what peace means to me.
And so as we move through the next few weeks, let us truly reflect upon what peace means to each and every one of us, and allow ourselves to add our positive energy surrounding peace and harmony, both individually and collectively, to the greater good of this place we call our home. Gaia, Mother Planet, Mother Earth. So did you know that the Holy Bible has been translated into 3,415 languages? And does each language translate exactly as we understand it? I would say probably not. According to both Jewish and Christian dogma, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and also the Torah, were all written by Moses in about 1300 BC. However, there is a lack of evidence that Moses actually existed, and that in the end of Deuteronomy, the author is described as dying and being buried. So if you're interested, check out chapter 14, verses 7, where we are told, "And Moses was 120 years old when he died, but his eye was not dim, nor the skin of his cheeks wrinkled." Now, I cannot tell you this is truth for sure, because I wasn't there. But I do have a question. If Moses wrote the book of Deuteronomy, how was he writing about his death and the days of mourning afterward? Well, maybe this was based on the customs of that time. Many scholars seem to feel that these books were written by many based upon internal clues and writing styles. Letters have different meanings in the Bible, so it is not out of the realm of possibility that different groups or individuals wrote these books. For example, E stands for Elohist, the name given to an author who referred to God as Elohim in the book of Exodus and a small part of the book of Numbers. And this author is also believed to have written the Bible's first creation account in Genesis. So keep in mind that Elohim is a plural noun, which then turns the meaning of this account to the translation that gods, not one God, but gods, created the heavens and earth. Now, J is believed to be the second author of Genesis and some of Exodus, including the detailed account of creation in the second book of Genesis, where Adam is created first, and then there is a serpent. Yahweh, the German translation of YHWH, or Yahweh, the name this author used for God. At one time, J was thought to have lived close to the time of E, But scholars have decided that because of some of the literary devices and phraseology that Jay uses, this would probably have come into existence about 300 BC, not 1300. The Jewish captivity in Babylon and I've got a quick example for you. Eve first appears in Jay's text when she is created from the rib of Adam. Rib is Ti in Babylonian and is associated with the goddess Tiamat, the mother deity. Ah, mother, father, god. It seems that a good deal of Babylonian mythology and astrology, including Lucifer, the morning star, snuck into the Bible during this time of captivity. There is a lot more about the letters P, which stands for priestly and probably stands for a whole group of writers, and probably existed sometime around the late 6th century BC, or D, which stands for the Deuteronomist, or dude who wrote Deuteronomy. So if any of this interests you, Google it. The seed has been planted. In the Science of Mind textbook, Ernest Holmes has a lot to say about proving it. For example, on page 50, paragraph 1, he tells us, "One of the great difficulties in the new order of thought is that we are likely to indulge in too much theory and too little practice. As a matter of fact, we only know as we can prove by actual demonstration. That which we cannot prove may or may not be true, but that which we can prove certainly must be and is the truth, at least to each and every one of us as we prove it." Now comes forth an interesting theory. If the proof is in the demonstration, does that mean that the truth will be the same for everybody? Nope. Not necessarily. Because if we can demonstrate to the level of our comprehension or belief or faith, would it not follow that each of us will have different results with our wants and desires? We must believe without the shadow of a doubt to make it so. So I was going on with all this who wrote what stuff, and something came to me very clearly. If there is only one mind, one life, one self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being, does it not follow that there is only one thought? So it really doesn't matter who or what or how many authors wrote the books of the Bible. What really matters is our belief in that thought and how we are going to use that belief. So it is really our individualization of that thought that counts for each of us as an individual. You know, I could stand up here for hours, which I promise I won't do today, and become blue in the face, or maybe crimson, I prefer the color crimson, telling you over and over and over that I have proof that God exists. But in your heart, if you don't accept this, then God simply will not exist to you. So let me ask you a question. How did you get to the center this morning? Perhaps you drove, or took a bus, or walked. But you got here one way or another, right?
Right.
Okay, so we're all on the same page so far. Now, what if I told you that each of those ways of getting here was simply a conveyance? Yes, they got you here. And they are all ideas that have reached their time. Trucks, cars, boats, planes, and trains are all part of the one mind, an idea waiting to be put on a blueprint, a drawing board, etc. And when they were ready to come into being, someone or a group of someones realized the component or components of this idea. And at the right time, they all came together, and whatever it is, was. So one interests me far, far more is thinking about what each of us was doing at the beginning of this week. Do you remember at what point you made the commitment to be here this morning? Really doesn't matter. And what it proves to me is the power of the one mind. For whatever reason, we are all here in this space at this time, on point, on purpose. And for each of us, our purpose is different. Maybe there will be something in today's lesson that may spark some interest, or maybe you came for a one-minute prayer after service to help move you in one direction or another. Or, and this is the greatest part, maybe you're not sure why you came here today, but for whatever reason, you are here, and God, your higher self, knows why. And it's never wrong. That is where the proof is for me, that it doesn't matter why, but for whatever reason, in this very moment, right here, right now, we have all been brought to this place to share a few moments together. That to me is the power. That to me is the presence. There is a song that is sung in many New Thought centers, written by Ron and Carol Harris, and within its lyrics are the words, "In this very room, there's quite enough love for all of us. And in this very room, there's quite enough joy for all of us. And there's quite enough hope and quite enough power to chase away any gloom. For spirit, one spirit, is in this very room." So if it feels comfortable, I invite you to put your hand over your heart and repeat after me. Right here.
Right here.
Right now.
Right now.
I know that spirit is in this very room.
I know that spirit is in this very room.
I feel the love.
I feel the love.
I feel the joy.
I feel the joy.
I feel the power.
I feel the power.
And I feel the hope.
And I feel the hope.
My soul is lifted right here.
My soul is lifted right here.
Right now.
Right now.
So take a breath. You have just confirmed the powers and presence of Spirit, God, right here in this very room. And by doing so, you have confirmed your belief in it as well. Is that the best thing ever? Of course it is. And so now we get to the existence of God. In the Holy Bible, there are 51 references to the existence of God. And I'm going to mention every one now. Just kidding. But I will give you a couple of starting points in a moment. If your interest wants to take you further, let us all be grateful for Google. Also, there are 4,960 mentions of God throughout the scriptures. It's pretty interesting. In the book of Hebrews 11:6, we are told that without faith, man cannot please God. For he that comes near to God must believe that he is. Remember what I mentioned earlier about the extent of our belief? If we believe, then you can come close to me, because I am then there for you, as you believe. In Exodus 3:14, God tells Moses that I am Aha Ashar High, or the living God. And this you shall say to the children of Israel, Ahaiha has sent me to you. And from the book of Revelation, which is full of references, I give you my favorite, Revelation 1:8. I am Alpha and Tau, the beginning and the ending, says the Lord God, who is, and who was, and is to come, the Almighty. Always is, always was, and is here, right now, with each and every one of us. The psalmist tells us in Psalms 33:9, for he spoke, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. And again in 139:16, thine eyes did see my substance, yet being imperfect. And upon thy books all these things were written, even before day was, and man was brought into existence. I'll give you just a couple more examples, and then we can move on. The book of Isaiah is rich with verses about the existence of a deity, and also the existence of the world as it is today. But that is a whole other talk, and we may explore it sometime in the future. However, if you are really interested and you would like to explore further and see what the prophets had to say about the world that we are living in today, prove it. In Isaiah 43:13, it is written that, "Yes, I am He, and there is none that can deliver out of my hands. What I will do, who can stop it?" And again from Isaiah 48:16, "Come near to me. Listen to this. I have not spoken in secret from the beginning. From the creation, there am I, and now the Lord God and His Spirit has spoken. I am there from the very beginning." But beginning is only our concept, a human concept. It is not God's concept. Because God was always there, always will be, and is here right now. We are all one. So that's some of what the Holy Scriptures has to say about the one infinite intelligence that moves through all creation. As I have stated, these are only a few of the myriad of biblical references that can be found. And if you find yourself hungering for more, I would encourage you to pursue this further. I found myself very inspired by the things that came to light, especially the things about the times we are living in. Just so much interesting material there. And I really became inspired as I read further and further as to where this talk was going. So far this morning, we have talked a bit about the biblical references to the existence of God, a creative power within the Bible, and briefly mentioned where Ernest Holmes stands on all of this. We have also mentioned that the existence of this creative power is a matter of our own belief system and our faith in our own recognition of it. So have I lost anyone so far? Oh, good, because if I had, I would have had to start over again. So, just kidding. And if you do have any questions about today's lesson, please, by all means, contact me. I would be happy to share more with you at another time. So, for the rest of this morning, I would like to concentrate a little more on what our founder, Ernest Holmes, has to add to this topic. On page 73, paragraphs 1 and 2 in the Science of Mind textbook, Holmes states that man's first discovery of his ability to think was taken as a matter of fact. He had always been able to think. It was proof that he existed. It gave him the ability to know his needs and to supply them. It appeared to be an automatic thing. Know what we've said about appearances before. You know, just because it's there and appears to be does not mean it is, and we have the power to change it. It appeared to be an automatic thing. It came with him and would doubtless die when he died. The brain seemed to be the organ of thought, and of course, when death stilled the brain, it would no longer operate. However, a day came when some wise man claimed that it is not the brain that does the thinking, for if the brain could think, it would keep on thinking when removed from the body. Yet without a brain, a man could not think, which proved that something behind the brain used it as an instrument. Man does think, so behind the brain, there must be a thinker. But where is the thinker? We do not see him. Do we have a right to say that there is a thinker when we have never seen him? Of course we do. For the proof of this reality is the evidence of thought. Back of the organism is the thinker and the doer, the mind. Ooh, Ah, I just love this stuff. This was the greatest discovery of all time, for it meant that the body without the thinker could not function. At first, man did not perceive this and thought only of his body as self-operating. But when he discovered that this was not the case, he found that he could consciously think and decide, and that something happened to his thoughts after he thought them. They went somewhere and returned to him as memory. But where did it go? Well, as humankind began to develop, and as that one thought, one mind began to grow and expand, so did man's concept and knowledge of what this thing might be. So again, on page 75, paragraphs 2 and 3, we are told in The Science of Mind that the science of mind is the study of life and the nature of the laws of thought. The conception that we live in a spiritual universe, that God is in, through, around, and for us. There is nothing supernatural anywhere, on any plane, that which today seems to us supernatural. After it is understood, it will be found as spontaneously natural. So there's nothing supernatural. There's no magic. However, it is spontaneous, much as we often have spontaneous thought. We say there's a universal mind, but no one ever saw it. We say God is spirit, but no one ever saw God. The Bible tells us, no man hath seen God at any time, only the Son. He hath revealed him. This is paraphrased from John 1:18. Now Ernest goes on to say, to express this idea in our language, no one has seen cause, because we see an effect, we know there must be a cause. Nothing is more evident than the fact that we live. And since we live, we must have life. And since we have life, there must be life. The only proof we have of mind is that we think. The eternal principle is forever hidden. So, where is the proof? Let me think about this for a minute. What would you say if I told you that the proof is everywhere? And I do mean everywhere. Remember your trip this morning? The proof is that when you went into the bathroom and turned on a light or flipped a switch, you expected the light to come on. And it did, unless you needed a new light bulb. We have control over that, you know. And when you turned on the faucet, the water came out. And you could control the temperature of the water. Why? Because at this point in time, you may have taken it for granted. Why? Because you expected it to be. You believed and had faith that it would. No matter what the process to get there, it started with a thought in the universe. The difference between light and darkness was one of the earliest thoughts from the very first pages of our current Bible records. And as time has gone on, that original thought has been refined and grown so that we can flip a switch and let there be light, so to speak. And even the Bible talks about the difference between warm and cold water. And if you don't believe me, well then,
Google it.
Prove it! Close. On page 148, paragraphs 1 through 4 in the Science of Mind textbook, we are told that our minds are an expression of the divine mind and must be of the same essence. That we find ourselves in an undesirable condition, and this is really important, that we find ourselves in an undesirable condition in the face of all this is merely proof that we have limited ourselves by our own freedom. Shall we not then reverse our thinking and take for our starting point the inherent nature of mental powers. We've gone far in the right direction on when we have determined that creation could have originated only in intelligence, and have realized further that our mental power must be the same in kind with the creativeness of God. Thus, we begin to sense that as our minds become more like the divine mind, we shall expand into a greater livingness. Our world, created by our consciousness, and our consciousness taking its color from the perception of our relationship to the infinite, we should strive toward a perfect vision, a perfect conception. We should expand our thought until it realizes all good, and then cut through all that appears to be and use the almighty power for definite purposes, such as peace in the season of nonviolence. We should daily enter a deeper union with life, a greater sense of that indwelling God, the God of the seen and unseen within us. When we speak into this mind, we have sown a seed of thought in the absolute, and we may rest in peace. We need not make haste, for it is done to us unto us as we believe. In that day they shall call upon me. I will answer. Paraphrase from Jeremiah 33:3. And so if you think that I have been feeding you a bunch of malarkey this morning, I would invite you to go outside and look at the sky. Feel the air on your face, your breath moving over your lips or through your nose, and prove it. Remember that the proof is within your faith and your belief. We are the power behind the presence. We are the creative force in the universe. I thank you for your time this morning and your attention. Namaste.
Namaste.